If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Oh, what are you doing? I'll tell you what you're doing. You're listening to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. Either you are, or I'll be skipping rope with your entrails. Ta-ta.
This is the Elder Scrolls Lorecast, your source for lore and so much more. Hey, welcome back. We're talking Elder Scrolls Iceberg episode number four. We're starting on number 21, moving down the list into deeper and deeper parts of the lore iceberg. But yeah, there's a lot.
Starting to get chillier, apparently, down here.
A little bit. I mean, there's like 500 entries, so we've got a long way to go.
No, it's still, you can still fly yourself up here. You'll be fine.
yeah. So welcome back. We're starting with a murdered king mystery, which probably isn't that much of a mystery. And then we're talking Daedra and the Monomyth and some other stuff. But hey, let's just get into it. Lotus, are you ready to talk about, you love Morrowind. You ready to talk about some Morrowind stuff?
I do, and I would love to talk about Morrowind stuff.
All right, well, we're kicking it off. Number 21, and if you're just catching this right now and you're like, wait a minute, what about number one? Jump back like a few months of episodes. You'll get there. We do these interspersed every so often on the feed. But here, let's talk about Helsith murdered King Lethen. How much do you remember this from playing Morrowind? Is this one that like
not
you noticed?
Not that much. I remember the name, but like, this is not a quest I super remember, like, all the fine details on. So reading through this was kind of a bit of a refresher.
Yeah, yeah. It's one of those...
I recognize the name, but beyond that, it was kind of... That was about it.
Right, yeah. It's one of those ones where things are, speculated about, and you have to have talked to the right person. But here, let's get into it. It is rumored, all but outright stated in-game, that Hlalu Helsith murdered King Lethen to usurp his throne... Helsith is known to hire assassins. Okay, so what are the details here? Well, I put it all, we have a spreadsheet where I put all this down, and I dug into this some more, and we have a whole second sheet with all the reasons why this is a thing. So turns out the death of King Athen? A-T-H-E-Y-N.
I always thought it was Athen, but I don't remember them ever saying that name, so I don't know.
Yeah, Athen Lethen. With two L's at the beginning. Before Helsith, a Hlalu prince from Wayrest, became king of Morrowind, the throne was held by Athen Lethen. Lethen was an elderly, well-liked, but largely ineffective puppet king who stayed out of the way of the Tribunal Temple and the Empire. So basically, he was just kind of doing his job, chilling, letting other people make all the decisions, and people still kind of liked him a lot. Well, Lethen died suddenly and unexpectedly just before the events of the Tribunal expansion in the game. His death allowed Helsith to immediately step in and claim the crown. The official imperial word was that Lethen died of natural causes due to his age, but the timing was so perfect that Helsith for Helseth that almost no one in Morhold believed it. Now, the main source of this is a document called The Common Tongue. In the quest Speak to the People, the player is tasked with investigating rumors about the king's death. You discover a broadside, which is an underground newspaper titled The Common Tongue. It says that basically the paper explicitly accuses Helseth of being a professional poisoner. It lists several figures back in High Rock in Wayrest, where he came from, who died mysteriously after opposing Helseth. The implication here is that, well, he took out the king in order to usurp the crown using poison, right?
Poison. And I was going to say, when you have a trail of similar events, it starts getting harder to prove that it wasn't you when you're the only, like, linking factor.
Right, right. So also, if you speak with Ravani Lethen, the late king's widow, she's convinced Helseth murdered her husband. She points to the common tongue as proof, and that Helseth's signature is basically murdering people through poison to get them out of the way. Yeah. Now, there's another point here. Helseth's reputation makes the murder highly believable. He's depicted as a Machiavellian ends just the means kind of ruler. He's kind of the personality type that seems like he would do it. But then there's the issue here with the Nerevarine. Man, that word is always hard for me to say. Helseth is the person who sends the Dark Brotherhood to assassinate you, the Nerevarine, at the start of the game, because he views you as a political threat, which,
right,
if you are legitimately the Nerevarine, you would be.
I would argue you are.
You are, right?
I mean, even if you're not legitimate, you still are because you're making claim to it. So it's like you're still, no matter what, yeah, he's not wrong. You are a political threat.
Right, right. But there's more to this, right? There's a book called A Game at Dinner. This is an in-game book that describes a dinner party where Helseth subtly poisons a guest to win a political argument, not even to usurp the crown, just to win an argument. Proving a point. In a meta twist, Helseth actually sponsored the publication of the book himself. He wanted people to know he was a murderer because he believed that fear is more stable foundation for a government than love, which is a quote from him directly. Now, this all ties together with all of these details and basically seems to imply that this is actually what happened.
Yeah. And I was going to say, going through this again, I don't know. I'm inclined to believe that this probably is, like, it's not just propaganda. Again, there's a lot of coincidences, which, you know, not necessarily guarantee anything, but you have the coincidences. He clearly doesn't shy away from it, which is almost a little bit of a confusing twist to it, because you'd think if he were trying to be subtle about it, unless he views himself as kind of like, I'm above the law type of deal. It's like, you know, if he assassinate your way to the top, nobody's really going to dethrone you at that point, I guess. So it's kind of like, okay, well, it doesn't matter how I got here. I'm here now.
Yeah.
And by the way, you should all fear me because I'm a lunatic.
Right, right, right. Yeah. Because that is the way I got here. And now you need to fear me. And then,
now you should be afraid of me because I will do whatever to keep this position because that's what I did to get this position.
Right. And it does kind of coincide with this idea that, like, if he was being pushed to do that by the Empire in order to take advantage of the dwindling power of the tribunal, then by putting him in place, and I don't know, there's some behind the scenes stuff that kind of plays into this as well.
Sure, sure.
But it seems highly likely. I don't think this is too debated in the lore. Seems like there's a lot of things that are implying that this is actually what happened.
It's definitely much more likely than unlikely, I would say.
Yeah, definitely. All right, so that's number 21. Let's move on to the next one. Number 22 in the iceberg is Daedric ritual abuse, which actually might reference a few different things. So Daedric worshippers are known to abuse themselves and others for the sake of their lords. This could also be referring to Daedric summoning, which sometimes takes on a form of abuse, and it might be referencing the similar, like, real world satanic ritual abuse that some of these things are inspired by. As we've talked about a lot on the podcast, there's a lot of real world inspiration for these things. But here, the first part of this is, for example, the abuse that some of the Daedra cause on mortals. One example of that would be Molag Bal creating vampires through the, we'll just call it, terrible abuse of women. in order to keep this a little more PG. If you know, you know.
That weird explicit one on this episode, but it's not pleasant.
It's not pleasant. If you know, you know. So there is that. But then there's also the idea that sometimes when conjuring Daedra, not just Daedric princes, but like actual Daedra to do your bidding, there's a level of abuse that's played into this. So an example of this is the conjuration ritual spell at the College of Winterhold. Do you remember this quest, Lotus, where you go up on the roof and you conjure a Dromora and then you fight him, you kill him, he disappears, and then you conjure him again, and then you kill him again, and then you conjure him again? Yeah.
I like to do that outside of quest too, just to prove my dominance.
You know, a little scamp and then just kick him in the butt. Yeah.
That's how I mastered my conjuration in Oblivion. It's like, it's a scamp. My bow and arrow skill went up. It's a scamp. And all I can imagine this poor little dude is like, please stop.
Maybe this item on the iceberg is just 100% inspired by Lotus.
I think. It's just what I do to power level.
Yep. Yeah. Ritual abuse of Daedra. Yeah.
It's the thought of that though, just like that quest or just in general, what we learned from Battlespire is like the reformation and resummoning is such a miserable experience that it like rips part of their soul away every time.
So yeah. And in the books, like, we've talked in the novels.
Yeah,
we've talked
about that too. Like, yeah. So it's just like, wow, what a truly awful experience.
Yeah. I mean, they come back.
Casually summoned and murdered.
They come back, but it's from their perspective, it is a long process of being like a tadpole and then going through the stages of like getting back to where they were. And that entire time, even when they're just a part of Daedric culture as somebody like a Dromora, it's just cutthroat. They're just vicious with each other. The whole thing, like that whole existence is suffering.
Yes, and that's the thing that's so wild is because, like, again, Battlespire gets into a lot of it. Cue my random Battlespire fact. It's just that causes so many of the issues with them being completely mentally unstable in that game, and they bring up the fact that that's why. They're like, this is just an eternity of suffering every time this happens, and it's happened more times than I can remember, and I'm like, wow, that is dark.
Yeah. Well, and there are real world theories that this, like our life here is actually suffering. Like that is one of the, like, that is, there are people who believe that. And like that we get reincarnated back into this life and then we just have to deal with it and we suffer and we die. And that's a real dark perspective on life, but yeah, it's also real dark in the lore. Yeah. All right. Well, any other thoughts on ritual Daedric abuse?
No, that sounds good.
All right, moving on. Something a little bit lighter. The Monomyth, number 23. This is another one that is not highly debated, but definitely has its intricacies. The Monomyth, we've talked about a lot. It is the common creation myth regarded that the creation of the Arbis is it came from the Daedra, and they invested themselves into the creation of everything, and the Daedra decided to like, nope, we're not going to do that, but we're still going to hang out, and then some of them noped out and left, all of that. And there's a lot of crossover between different cultures and their perceptions of the Monomyth, and over time, the Monomyth evolved. Originally, it was kind of an Altmer belief system that eventually was taken over by the Empire, and then it's kind of integrated and been it's kind of this hodgepodge of all the different faiths, just kind of in a safe version of it, but doesn't really focus on any specific culture's like particular version other than really the Imperials at this point in the lore, I guess. Is that a good way to say it?
Yeah, no, pretty much I would say.
Yeah. So there's that. We've covered the Monomyth a lot. If in fact you go back and listen to our Aedra episodes and that stuff, I think we even have an episode specifically where we read through parts of the Monomyth. This one isn't very highly debated. I think the thing about it though, is that it is a very convenient and edited version of what may be something that's actually alluding to the real facts and lore behind everything. So it's not 100% accurate, but it's kind of a good starting place to familiarize with the basic concepts.
Right. It's a good way to kind of get people accustomed to understanding things that might be really different than what they're used to.
Right. Yeah. Because there is, as with anything, if you're studying anybody's faith stuff, if you believe one thing in this world and you're studying somebody else's faith, it's kind of hard to make that jump because they do see things in very different ways. The same thing applies to video game lore and the Elder Scrolls. It comes across in a very different way. It's a very unique mythology. And this kind of gives you an easier entry in.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
All right, so that's 23. 24 is the moon phases. Now, the moon phases are really interesting because there's a lot going on here. Tamriel's two moons, Masar and Secunda, and their phases directly influence the mortal world in many ways, most notably in how the Khajiit are born. So this is the first way. We've talked about this in the Khajiit episode. Khajiit morphology, the way their bodies are shaped, their fur stalks, is dependent on the phases of the moons at the time of birth. And that you can go everywhere from an Alfik, which is like a tiny little house cat sized Khajiit, to the really, really big guys. What were they called? It just fell out of my brain.
The Senshei Rod.
Yeah, those guys.
Anybody with rot at the end is a bigger version of another one.
Right, right. And what's funny to me is all the middle ones are bipedal. They're all stand up on two legs, like a humanoid kind of shape. But the very smallest and the very biggest are the most cat-like.
Are back to being, like, I was going to say back to being quadrupeds.
Right. It's kind of weird.
Yeah, it is interesting.
Yeah, so there's some other pieces here, too, because the moons don't just have to do with the Khajiit. There is the idea of the corpse of Lorcan. According to many creation myths, Masar and Secunda are actually the two halves of the dead god Lorcan's body, which was split after he tricked the other gods into creating the mortal plane. So if you're not familiar with Lorcan and the foundations of that lore, he was the trickster god who basically tricked all the Aedra into actually making everything. And then they killed him. And one of the pieces of this is they shoot his heart into the water, and that becomes Red Mountain in, like Morrowind. But then also his body was bisected and sent into the sky as the two moons, which is a little weird. That's how that works.
A little more intense than just firing it across the plane of, Tamriel.
Yeah. Yeah.
Turning you into literal planet sized things and throwing you into the sky.
Well, I wonder if you think of it this way, we know how powerful the heart of Lorcan is. I would imagine the rest of his body would be very powerful as well. And if anybody could just dig it up and pull a fingernail off of it and become a god or something, then that would be kind of a problem.
I was going to say the bicuspid of Lorcan.
Yeah, you just,
one straight tooth.
So, okay, but there's other stuff here. There's the tides of magic. This is another piece of the way the moons might work. Like on Earth, the moons control the tides because of gravity, right? But in Tamriel, they may also regulate the flow of magicka from Aetherius to Nirn, which is kind of interesting. I don't know how that works. One of the thoughts is magic comes through the sun, because the sun's basically the hole that Magnus left in Aetherius, or also the stars.
But the stars are all little puncture marks.
Yeah, but like the moons, depending on their phases, maybe they reflect more or less of that star and sunlight onto the planet. And so magicka tends to fluctuate depending on phases of the moon. So that's kind of a thing.
Yep.
I don't know if there's...
Potentially, at least.
Yeah, potentially. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, this is actually one of the ones I love... this lore. I think this is actually one of the really unique aspects to this series, and one of the things that makes the Khajiit so cool, because it gives you the whole basis of why they have such a tie to the moons and like why they're so meaningful to them, because it literally defines their existence, which is just really cool. And I mean, I'm sure, just like everything, something spawns from something else, but it's just like, it's such a unique concept from anything I've read or played or anything like that, where it's one of those things that's very much, it feels Elder Scrolls and almost nothing else. Like I said, I'm sure there's something it's based on, obviously, it feels so Elder Scrolls type of deal and so unique to the Khajiit in general.
There is that, the whole tie to the Khajiit thing. But to jump back to the Lorcan and tides of magic, do you think these two things are connected, maybe? Like the more light that hits the moon and is reflected into Tamriel, then the more of Lorcan's body is shining down?
Shining through? It could. I guess that one's a little harder to gauge based on anything you would experience in game necessarily, I suppose, which is usually what I base a lot of my stuff on. It's what can you experience in game?
Right. This is this is all just speculation. Like maybe those things are tied together somehow. I don't know.
So that's why this is one of these ones that's much trickier to actually have direct involvement with in game, unless it was just like in the next game. It's just like, because you choose your signs in some of the games as opposed to like your standing stones and stuff like that.
Right.
But it's like theoretically you could choose your sign, and like I guess maybe the basis for some of the signs could tie into this, maybe, but it's hard to determine exactly. And it's like I don't know, it doesn't seem out of the realm of possibility, but this one sounds, the degree of magic coming through always strikes me as a little more speculative than anything that you can
nail down.
Like some of these are a little more like this is a thing. This right. one seems like it could be a thing.
Right, right. So there's one other detail about the moons that we can talk about here. We're not going to go into the third moon. That's like a whole other thing. We're not going to open that up.
That's a whole different beast.
That's a whole different beast. We're just talking about the two moons and their phases. But there's also something about the void nights. Between the fourth era 98 and the fourth era 100, the moons actually vanished from the sky. This caused a massive crisis in Elsweyr because Khajiit births were stillborn and resulted in horrific deformity since the lattice was broken. The moon lattice and all of that is a big part of the Khajiit thing, which we're not going to dive into here. When the Thalmor claimed they brought the moons back, the Khajiit became their loyal allies, leading to the collapse of the Third Empire's influence in the south. This was a thing, we've discussed this before, but basically the moons seemed to disappear and then they reappeared, and then the Thalmor took credit for it, and yep. they were like, hey Khajiit guys, we solved your moon problem.
We totally brought your moons back.
Yeah,
which I very much do not think they had anything to do with, and it was a absolute just making the most of the situation to their advantage. Just like, yeah, no, the moons are back. They think we know a lot, so let's just double down on that, and they can't prove we didn't bring them back.
Yeah, we're really powerful mages because we're all Ulmer, right? And we can do something like make the moons come back. Right. No problem.
You should totally join us, because look what we would do. Look, we could maybe we'll just lose them again if you don't do what we want.
Because you know, if the moons aren't there, then no more Khajiit.
Yeah.
So I guess you guys need the moon, so you need us, right?
Yeah. I was gonna say that is one of the ones that I've always found to be like such a what do you call it? Opportunist move.
Yes, opportunistic. Right.
Yeah. It's right. Such an opportunist.
Right. It's also interesting how much it confirms how strongly the moons have an effect on the Khajiit, in the fact that like, if you are born with no moons, you die. You're not alive. Right. Like that's it. So that would be the end of the Khajiit as a race if the moons were to go away.
Correct. If they were just permanently gone, eventually you would just stop having Khajiit.
Yes, yes. And yes, Barky, the Necromancer's Moon, that's a whole different can of worms. Well, I'm sure that is coming up further down the iceberg. So
I also appreciate that joke. A whole different can of worms. Yep.
Good joke. But yeah, we'll get that on
deep cut.
On a serious note, we'll get to that in the future. Here, let's move on to the next one. Number 25, the Knight of Green Flames. The purging of Ulmer, who defected from the Thalmor in the city of Sentinel. This is only referenced in dialogue with Legate Fesendil of Skyrim. He's the Imperial Legion officer in charge of operations in the Rift. Now, there's a specific quote. If in Skyrim you go and you talk to him, there's a few different lines of dialogue you can go through. But one in particular, where you can say, what happened during the Night of Green Fire? And his response is this. Back in 42, so that's 4th era 42, I was stationed in Hammerfell on leave in Sentinel, trying to track down some refugee relatives who had fled persecution in Alanor. Suddenly, an explosion of magic in the refugee quarter. Thalmor mages were attacking the Ulmer dissidents who were resisting with magic of their own. I ran to the scene with other legionaries who were stationed there, but the entire quarter was a smoking ruin by the time we arrived. Everyone was dead, wholesale slaughter. The Dominion, not content with killing dissidents at home, came to Hammerfell to finish the job. We're supposedly at peace now, but I put in to be stationed here to keep an eye on the Thalmor. I have a feeling they're behind this unrest in Skyrim. I said he was a Thalmor. I meant he was an Imperial agent who was stationed over there and monitoring the Thalmor. And so this happens and seems like it was the Thalmor who were behind it. And this, what I find interesting about this is that the event doesn't happen in Skyrim. It happens in Sentinel, which is in Hammerfell, which might play into the events of the Elder Scrolls VI.
I was gonna say there's so many things that these could I mean again it's all speculation still, but like there's so many things that could tie in based on where the Elder Scrolls 6 is assumed to be based on the very, very limited information we have. So many of these things could be setups, especially because we know the series does that, and oftentimes we don't know that it was such a setup until we see it and then look back and we're like, oh my God, this was like slapping us in the face the whole time. We didn't even realize. But we've been sitting on, what are we on now? 14 years?
Oh my gosh, yeah, it's getting real long. It's getting real long.
Yeah. Oh no,
But
we're
to
11, which we're in 26, so we're in year 15. So
15,
we've been
yeah.
ruminating on potentials for 15 years.
But to your point, they do this. Every game in the
They
series
do.
has stuff because, and we talked about this a lot on an episode a few months ago. So much of the lore for the games from Daggerfall forward was already planned out. Like they had already speculated about, okay, in a future game, we'll go here and this will be the main plot. And then we'll go here and this will be part of the plot. So they have, when there's stuff that shows up like this, and it's not just some quest designer was like, you know what, I'm just going to put this random bit of dialogue in here as
Yeah,
flavor
I was going to
text.
say,
It connects to something.
I believe it's Daggerfall. Could be Redguard, but I think it's Daggerfall. The FMV where the books are on the shelf. It's literally the games for a while. Like the fourth book that you can see says Oblivion. It's like, dude, the signs are always there, but we just need to know which ones are real and which ones are red herrings type
Right,
of thing.
which makes
So,
speculation so fun because we just don't know. We're like,
yeah,
oh,
right,
is
because
this
there's the potential
something?
for
Is
any of this
this?
lunatic stuff that we're throwing out here. Could be.
Could be. So there you go. Knight of Green Flames. Also, why were the flames green? Magic, I guess.
Why not?
Why not make them interesting and memorable?
It was in the crowd store. It was free that week.
It was, yeah, it was a color variation. It was.
Yeah, the color variation you could earn that week.
Yeah, but it does make it kind of notable, right? And it also makes it seem this would be really interesting if when we get Elder Scrolls 6 and when we play through it, there's references to why flames would be green and it's some sort of metaphysical thing that ties into the storyline. That would be
Yeah.
amazing to be like, oh my God, it was right there. It was right there. It
Right,
was
right.
right
It's been
there.
there this whole time.
Yeah. All right. Let's go on to the next one. This one, I think, is going to be the last one because it's probably the juiciest of the set that we're going through today. The Tribunal killed Nerevar. This is another Morrowind thing, and there's a bunch of detail to go over on this one. Lotus, is there anything you want to say about this before we dive in?
I am in complete favor of this. I 100% think this is what happened. Just totally makes way more sense than the what I believe is the propaganda alternative. So
There's a
going
lot of
into this,
evidence.
I definitely ascribe to this being truth.
All
So,
right. Yeah. So let's walk. We'll work through the points. I've got a series of points here. Point number
yes.
one, there are contradictory accounts. The most compelling evidence is the existence of two conflicting historical accounts found in the game, Morrowind. The official version, Nerevar at Red Mountain, claims Nerevar died of his battle wounds after making the Tribunal swear never to use the tools of Kagranak. This is like the generally accepted story, or at least the story they want people to believe, right? Then there's the secret version, The Battle of Red Mountain, written by the dissident priests. Now, this is another book. These are both books in the game. This account claims that after the battle, the Tribunal used poisoned robes and daggers to murder Nerevar while he was in a weakened state so they could break their oath and seize divinity. So that specifically, a bunch of priests who are like, no, we know the real deal here. Tribunal, they did it. They're behind it. All right, so already some speculation. Two different
Yes,
accounts.
there's a little bit of two sides with very different stories, but is there a reason why, is there more reason why they're coming up with these different stories, or is one actually true and the other is not? Well, one of them,
Right,
obviously,
right.
they both can't be true.
Right. Was it beneficial to those priests in order to push this other agenda and this
Other
other
narrative,
story
right.
in order to gain power for themselves or something like that? Right. There's a lot of that kind of stuff you're never really sure about. All right. Point number two, the Sermons of Vivec. Now, the Sermons of Vivec, the 36 lessons, they're weird. People have interpreted
They're
them. They've figured out a lot about them, but also Vivek can be a liar. We know that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
And the sermons of Vivek serve multiple goals sometimes. Well, in Vivek's own writings, in the 36 lessons, there is this layer of like hidden guilt. Vivek, being a god of dualities, left a confession hidden in plain sight. And people figure this out eventually. The hidden message is if you take the first letter of each paragraph.
This is basically one of my favorite lore things in the Elder Scrolls, what you're about to go over.
Yeah, this is cool stuff. And this is stuff that wasn't like, it's not spelled out in the game. People had to spend years like figuring this out after the game came out.
As much as I will say that a lot of Kirkbride stuff I feel is a little too far, I also think him with some degree of editing and occasionally being allowed to do his own thing is peak for the series, because games and writing just don't go this weird.
And the layers like this, like, so we'll get into it here. It seems like he very specifically wrote this, like these sermons. And like I said before, they serve multiple reasons and they're multi-layered and there's kind of a genius to it.
That's what I was about to say. The amount of layers to the writing in the 36 lessons of Vivek, which granted some of it does sound like
gobbledygook. Yeah,
it's sure. Complete gobbledygook.
Yeah.
The fact that the planning behind this exists, because there's no way this accidentally exists. It's just like, that is a level of detail in writing that is like unparalleled. I can't fathom being able to like plan how much planning that would take to write something like this.
Right. So if you look through the first letter of each paragraph of sermon 36, it spells something out. Foul murder. Sermon 29. This sermon serves as a key to the others. If you use the numbers provided in sermon 29 to pull words from the other sermons, it creates a sentence. He was not born a god. His destiny did not lead him to this fate. He chose this path. He struck a dead god. He killed his friend to cut his spirit free. All right. So little hints already in Vivek's stuff. Maybe Vivek hinting at things subconsciously, or maybe he implanted these because he was feeling guilty, but somehow this made it into his writings. So number three, the foul murder artwork. This is interesting. Michael Kirkbride, the writer of a lot of this stuff, released an image titled Foul Murder, which serves as the definitive visual evidence for this iceberg entry. This was 10 years later. The art depicts the tribunal standing over a dying Nerevar. Each member is performing a symbolic mutilation. I have the image here. I'm going to put on screen for those of you who are able to see the video version. You have Amalexia holding the face or mask. Sothisil, no, it's actually reversed. It's Amalexia is at the feet in the image, holding Nerevar's feet. Sothisil is holding the mask or his face, maybe his actual flesh torn off.
Yeah.
And Vivek is holding Muatra, his spear, which is stabbing through his chest. Now, this mirrors the Nerevarine's journey. They must return as a stranger with a mask, walk a new path with their feet, and fulfill the prophecy which the spear points the direction for. So how do you feel about this one, Lotus?
Okay, one, I think this artwork is very of its time, but it's very cool. And I will say on a non-serious note, I love Sothisil's little squinty mouth.
His little wiggly mouth.
Little wiggly like, mouth thing.
Yeah.
If you're not watching the video version, you can look this up or just skip to this portion of it type of thing. Because his artwork is very, it's very raw. It's pen and paper. Like it's really devoid of color. And it's very like, it looks almost like an ancient text itself, the way he scribbles it type of thing. So again, this just follows suit along with it's depicting pretty aggressively as again he has no feet, they've been cut off, he's getting harpooned in the back. It's a pretty graphic image type of thing, and again falls right in line with it's just like, yep, you're getting essentially betrayed from all three people that you trusted the most,
right? And so this is meta evidence. This isn't like evidence in the game, it's not evidence in a book in the game. This is something Kirkbride posted 10 years later. So
yes,
Morrowind comes out what, 2003, so this would be 2013.
Yes, so that, yes, yeah. And it's just It looks like when you are seeing a documentary on something and they're like, oh, this is the storyboard, or here's just some of our like preliminary sketches that we're going to do in game and stuff like that. It looks like that. And it's just, it's got a very unique style to it that just, yeah, it fits the vibe and of Morrowind, and also seems like it explains some stuff that was left ambiguous.
So that's some pretty solid evidence right there that I feel like that was him going, okay, the community's figured this out.
Yeah, you guys got there.
Here's a confirmation. Okay, this is what it looked like. But there is more evidence. Number four, the Ashlanders and the dissident priests. The nomadic Ashlanders have maintained an oral tradition of the murder for centuries. They never accepted the tribunal's divinity, viewing them as false gods and traitors. During the main quest, the dissident priests provide you with an apocrypha. So these are like hidden writings, which contained the heavy documentation of temples suppressed, all pointing toward the tribunal's betrayal. So the fact that there are dissidents in the game that have been basically saying this from the beginning is pretty hard evidence for it.
Yeah.
Number five, Almalexia's mental state. Now, in the tribunal expansion, we see Almalexia descend into madness as her divine power fades. Her willingness to murder Sothisil and attempt to kill the Nerevarian to maintain her status suggests that she was always capable of such a betrayal. When she tells the Nerevarian, I've killed one god, I can certainly kill another, in quotes, she's likely referencing to the murder of Nerevar, which totally tracks.
Exactly. That all tracks again. And that's just it. It's like each of them carries their own burden from their lust for power type of deal. And it's just like they each kind of
it
they
comes
each
with a cost.
Evolve in a different way.
It comes with a cost over time. Like, you can only maintain a lie for so long, you know?
Yeah.
And then there's the sixth one, and I think this one's interesting in its own way. It's not as definitive as the others, but the ghost of Kanet Ashurnisadu. Words are hard. In a minor but haunting detail, a ghost found in the ancestral tomb of the Urshiklaku Ashlanders near the entrance to the Nerevarine Trials explicitly tells the player in the game that they were betrayed by those they trusted most. So another subtle hint.
Yeah.
So you add all this stuff up together and it feels pretty clear.
Pretty undeniable. Yeah. That this is what really happened as opposed to what they want you to believe happened.
Right. Right. And Kirkbride's basic confirmation well, here's the other thing, though. Kirkbride has done other stuff that like other meta level stuff, other Correct. Writings beyond the Elder Scrolls games. And sometimes they go off in these weird directions. So you might be listening to this and think, well, he shared a drawing of it that should be enough evidence to confirm it. But he also wrote Coda, which he said is not a literal future. It's a interpretation of the way things could possibly go.
Correct. And once he is not part of the project, I'm definitely more of like he can provide insights to that and stuff like that. But the Elder Scrolls series, world, everything is a collaborative effort. And if I've always kind of had the what do you have is canon, not canon type of thing, which I don't generally care too much for those debates, but it's just like whoever is the team, regardless of who that is, crafting the game in this situation or whatever the IP is, they are the ones telling you the story. Now, you can not like it as much. You could prefer somebody else's version. Like, I think Morrowind was like peak weird stuff, but like also still like logical enough that it was like great. But like, you can like or not like directions that people take it. But like, once you're not on the project, it's like you can have what you thought about it.
Yeah, you can have your original intent.
But it's like if you're not the one that's still crafting that story, you've essentially retired and moved on.
Right.
Then
right.
at that point, it's the current team that's making it. So the story has gone in their direction, even if that direction, which we've seen throughout the series, seems like it twists and turns a little bit, maybe not with the way it originally was designed, and then it became this other thing as a result.
Right. Right. Yeah, it's the canonicity lies with the current creator because they could always redact things and go back and add more evidence or whatever. But that doesn't mean that that evidence ever really goes away. Like, the things I've listed here that are in-game evidence are always going to be in-game evidence. Now, you might release a new game in the future that says, well, we can recontextualize this through these events or through even more evidence that proves that this person's a liar or whatever. And then now you're making it even more obscure and hard to determine the truth. And that's fine too. Like, really, it's kind of the way the real world works, is that for a certain period of time, people might go, you know what, this total amount of evidence we have is this, the majority of it points to this being the most likely thing that we believe. And so therefore that's pretty much what we're going to believe right now. And then time goes by, more evidence comes out, and then we go, oh, well, now the evidence has shifted because we can see it in a different light. That can happen as well. So it's to say that, like, something has, I'm on your side with this, to say that this absolutely has to be the definitive thing, and if it changes, I'm going to be mad and I'm going to get upset about it, is a little kind of silly. But on the flip side, that's where the evidence points. So I'm willing to say that this is actually what happened.
I would say exactly. And that's the thing. And it's just kind of like, as kind of noted in chat, like, basically I have to go with whoever is the harbingers of the story at the time is what I go with. They can add stuff that totally helps later, but at that point, it's just you taking what they've provided, and if it supports it more, cool. You know what they even... More confirmation that might have been what they intended.
Right.
But I don't feel that necessarily means that it's more or less true. It's just like, okay, well, yeah, that was also even the direction they were going in, obviously.
Right. And this is one of the things I think that a lot of people get stuck on, is that in the real world, there are real events that really happen.
Things actually do and don't happen.
And the evidence for that can mount in different directions. And sometimes we get that stuff wrong in retrospect because we don't have the right evidence or whatever. But regardless of all of that, there is a core truth. There is a core, this thing actually happened at a certain point in history.
Right.
Fiction doesn't work that way. There's no formation. It's a crafted story, and that story can be recrafted and shaped and changed. And you may not like that it was recrafted and changed, but that doesn't change. Like, this is one of those things that happens all the time with this show and with the Fallout Lorecast, is people will say, well, you should do some lore about this. And I'm like, there's no information about that. Like, right, it's like, talk about the Fallout vaults in Wisconsin. And I'm like, well, if nobody's revealed any vaults in Wisconsin, then there's no lore there. I can't tell you about that.
Right, because that hasn't been crafted yet. And that's one of the things that is kind of interesting, because a lot of, at this point, Elder Scrolls Online has been around so long. Some of the stuff, and I appreciate that it's finally starting to just be a little more just generally accepted, probably because the wait for Elder Scrolls 6 has been so long. Mm-hmm. But people are just kind of starting to just have dealt with this lore for so long, and it's added so much to the series, and it's really just doing a lot to fill in gaps more than anything else. You're getting a lot of just like, oh, okay, yeah, this just fills in some of the like more nitty gritty stuff than like, oh, well, this story part happens. It's like, well, no, here's the anatomy of Khajiit. It's like straight up explained. And it's like, oh, okay, that's actually, now it's just confirmed that that's how that works and stuff like that. But to your point, until it's actually written, we don't have it.
And if it's rewritten and changed, then it's rewritten and changed, whether you like it or not. It's just kind of how it goes.
At that point, like, as it's brought up by Barkey, it's like, we just make it up. And it's like, well, then, and then you can be a fantastic fan fiction author,
right?
Which I guess in the world of like Halo or whatever, they adopted some of the books because they liked them so much. So it's like,
or a mod author who gets hired by Bethesda because they really like the mod that you made that expanded out the lore of something in the game. Like, you could do that. Like, and maybe you get hired by them, and then maybe they incorporate those ideas into the next game. And then that becomes
the lore.
Yeah. That becomes the new lore. Like that could happen. Yeah. So in some ways it's actually more dynamic, and that actually makes it better. But all that said, I'm pretty sure they murdered him. Like,
yes, and with all these nebulous things aside, they totally murdered him.
I'm pretty sure that's going to be, that is the truth, and that truth, regardless of any other evidence we get, is probably going to stay that way.
Yeah,
so
that would be my assumption too, because it seems like, if anything, they've just been supporting it more rather than trying to muddy the waters.
There you go. All right. Well, those are the iceberg entries, I guess is the way to say it, that we're discussing
those
this week.
Those are the bergs from those this are the, specific piece of ice.
Those are the ice cubes off of this iceberg. But we'll be covering more. Like, there's so much more to go over. We'll be covering those in the future. But don't go anywhere, because we will be back with, we got to thank our patrons, but also the random UESP page for this week. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
This is Hamish Morak, Dragonborn, and you are educating yourself to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast.
All right, quick shout out to our patrons. Thank you so much for your continued support. Patreon.com/Elder Scrolls Lorecast. We don't have any new ones this week to shout out, but if you do sign up, we'll shout you out on the next episode of the show. But we do have Daedric Princes who get shout outs every week. Kirisi, Blinding Vision, Hircine, Peter R., Austin B., and Mintaka. Thank you for your continued support. And to all 125 of our paying patrons, thanks for your support.
Thank you all.
And you can also sign up.
Appreciated.
Yeah, you're very much appreciated. And you can also sign up for free just to make sure you get notifications. And sometimes we give things away. I gave away some torch bugs on the Discord.
I saw that. Yeah, I saw that. I was like, ooh, somebody found some torch bugs that hadn't been given away yet.
Yeah, yeah. Like every so often, Zoss is very nice and they give us some things that we can give away to our community. So thank you for Zoss for that. And you never know. Yeah, this is a good reason to be on the Robots Radio Discord because I tag everyone in that channel and I'm like, hey, here's a code. First one to claim it gets it, you know, or maybe I'll drop some on the on the Patreon, or Lotus does this on occasion too. So
I was going to say, I forget what day it was. I was like, ooh, we're about to get a new stock of resupply. So I got to clear out my old one. And we just gave away, like, I don't know, it was like 50,
just a bunch of
codes,
them. Yeah.
Just to all platforms. Yeah. Just like, all right, well, just here you go.
Here's some crowns. Here's an expansion pack that you might not have. Yeah. All that stuff. But thank you for your support. And if you'd like to help out in other ways, you can leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. And if you do, we'll read it out on a future episode. You can also comment on Spotify. Leaving us a nice comment in the comments to say something nice would be wonderful. We really does keep us going. So thank you for that. This one comes from Complexity, who writes, must listen. Love the podcast. Only been listening to it for 3 weeks right now, but love how much information you have and give for the lore and connect to real world things when it is relevant. Highly recommend to anyone. Question for Lotus. Which do you think will happen first? Elder Scrolls 6 releases or your kid turns 6?
Oof.
You're at 1 year, right? 1 year?
Yes. Well, I'm a year. We're a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what was my wacky prediction? So 2030.
You were joking 2030 or something like that.
Yeah.
But I think last time we talked, you were on the side of like 2028.
Yeah, no. In realistic terms, I think 2028. So I think we'll squeak in Elder Scrolls 6 before she turns 6.
I think so too. I think we're getting it fall of next year, 2027.
Yeah, I think little L will... We'll still be under 6 by the time we get 6 would be my guess.
That would be good. I'm a fan of that.
That would be horrifying if Little Lotus is
Little Lotus.
Years old to align with Elder Scrolls 6.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you for taking the time to leave that review. And
I appreciate it.
Anyone else has questions for Lotus, leave us a 5-star review.
Also, it's moderately disturbing that I actually needed to think about what I thought would come out first in like real context because it's been so long.
It has been. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. There
one
you go.
Day.
One day. We'll get it one day. And then, man, this show's going to, we're going to have all sorts of fun new stuff to talk about. It's going to be so good. It's going to be a lot of fun. But to wrap this up, we've got our random UESP page. This one is an Elder Scrolls Online entry about people. Do you want to any guess? Any guess
just
of
people in general?
It's a person from Elder Scrolls Online. You could guess what race they are. You could guess, are they part of a specific group? Where they could be found? Do you have any guesses about this? Let's see if I can like put this into your brain. If we have some telepathic powers,
palace real quick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what do you think?
All right, hold on. You know what? It's going to be this person that I'm next to right here.
Did you just hit random too? What are the chances of us both hitting random and getting exactly the same page?
I actually have Elder Scrolls Online up on my other screen. I'm fishing.
Oh, okay.
There's somebody fishing next to me. It is a elfique called Suraj. Is it Suraj?
Wow. Actually, it's Akita, a Red Guard member of the Fighters Guild.
Okay, so not even close.
Not even close. She can be found in Bandarai Trading Post.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So
there was an off peak next to me, so I doubled down on that. But okay, so not even in the ballpark of who I was standing next to. Excellent.
Yep. There's the dialogue and things, the quest. There's some related quest events and things, but she's pretty badass. She's got some cool armor. She's got a big old mug of something she's drinking.
Redguard armor is always so cool.
Yeah, it's cool stuff. But there you go. That's our random page for the week. Lotus, you have anything else to share before we head out?
No, we actually didn't get to record Tales last weekend because of Easter and family obligations and running all over the place. So it was a little chaotic. So my PAX East recap, as well as all of the stuff that's been in Elder Scrolls Online, I know we've all been like playing a bunch again. So we'll be covering a lot of that with the updates. Obviously not the patch notes. Definitely check out our friends at Red Diamond Courier if you ever want like patch note details. They dive deep on that stuff. But the new updates, real good. And I still want to chat about all this fun stuff I saw at PAX East and stuff like that. So that'll be this weekend. And I guess the only thing for me that I'm actually doing, some people have seen it. I have restarted uploading because it's woefully overdue. Daggerfall playthrough, I am finally getting those updated to my YouTube for people.
Nice.
From the live streams. I had to do more editing for some of them, which is why it took a while, and I'm just short on time, so it took way longer than I meant to. But with some of the disconnects, I had to stitch the episodes together a bit more than I usually do.
Mm-hmm.
But those are done now, so I actually will be releasing another one probably tomorrow night from when this is being recorded, which would be Friday the 10th. So I know a lot of people have been mentioning like, oh my god, you're back and you're actually like finishing it. Yes, that is the plan. So stay tuned if you like checking out the older games. Those will be uploaded to my YouTube, which is just Lotus of Doom.
Updated,
nice, easy to find.
Updated to the YouTube.
Yep.
Lotus, do you remember the game Primal Rage?
Yes.
We covered that.
Yes,
in Retro Recall this week.
Is that your Retro Recall?
That was our Retro Recall. Primal Rage.
I haven't listened to the new one yet.
Yeah, dinosaurs fighting each other. Yeah.
You've actually only tackled games that I've played.
Oh, wow.
So far.
Wow. That's
which
cool.
I find kind of funny because I was like, oh, wow. I was like, I don't even consider myself that well-versed in all games. And I was like, oh, man, you're picking some gems from when I was a kid.
Yeah. So if you're interested, Retro Recall, we covered Primal Rage. The title is Primal Rage better than a wet monkey fart? Which if you've played the game, you know that you can play as a giant monkey that can fart on your enemies. So
I haven't played in a long time. I'm actually curious. I'm not sure that it is.
Spoiler. It's not. It's just not that great. It's okay.
My cousin had it, so.
Yeah, so that's the one we covered this week. But we've been covering a bunch of retro games over at Retro Recall. You can also check out the Fallout Lorecast, the Elder Scrolls Lorecast is what I do here, and the Lord of the Rings Lorecast. Those are my other shows. But thank you, everybody, for being here. Chat, thanks for joining us. And Lotus, thanks for being here as usual. I feel like I'm forgetting something, but I don't think I am. So I guess until next time, if you have an iceberg, put it in your drink. Like a piece of ice.
That's perfect.
That's a good outro.
That was flawless. Flawless execution.
Yeah, take those ice blocks off the... All right, bye.
Most awkward sign-off.
Thanks for tuning in to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. Check out robotsradio.net for more podcasts just like this. And join us on the Robots Radio Discord. Be part of a community of over 5,000 people who are excited about video games and so much more. Robots Radio. Games. Lore. Stories. Community. Just press play.